Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Gnostic Episode 4, a segment I like to call The X-Files. Here on the first episode, I interview Johnny, who deconverted from Christianity and was at one time very involved in politics. So I hope you guys enjoy our discussion. We have a little bit of religion and politics thrown in. And so thank you for tuning in. And again, if you want to come on this show, please go ahead and send an email to notgnosticpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your name, how you would like to be called on the show, and what times are good for you. One more time, that is notgnosticpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy The X-Files. Why don't you go ahead and first just sort of introduce yourself, like, what is your background and what kind of job, I guess, are you in, or, and things of that nature.
I understand, yeah. So presently I live in Washington State. That doesn't matter to me, really. I work in the customer service industry. What was I thinking of? Yeah, so that's my background. I also, I come from a conservative homeschooling Christian background, I guess.
Okay.
K-12 as a kid. So, very, very, very fundamentalist homeschooling kind of background.
Okay, I see. So are your parents Christian still? How long were you a Christian?
I went through a long doubting phase for a while through my teens and stuff, but it really started to kind of take shape when I got to be 19 or 20. So about okay. 6 years.
6 years? 6 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually about how long I was a Christian, I think. I got involved really into the faith around high school, I talk a little bit about it in episode one with my friend, once I moved away, I basically fell just sort of like faith just sort of naturally fell away, essentially. It wasn't something I wanted to have happen. It just kind of happened, I guess.
Yeah.
So are your parents still Christian?
Oh, yes. Very much so. They probably, growing up, they were always Christian from the time I was born. Mm-hmm. So that way, I think I accepted salvation, I guess, in the Christian sense when I was 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of, through the years, held on to that, kept kind of doubting myself and stuff. But it's kind of weird how that happens, though, once you kind of move away from it, like you get time to reconsider what you're really thinking.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because it's like, you know, they claim that, you know, the Bible is like the truth of the universe and things of that nature, or God is in the universe, you see him everywhere, but if moving away is enough to make you question things more, you know, if thinking about the world is enough to make you wonder if this is really true or not, then it can't possibly be the truth of the universe. If, like, you know, a simple question like regarding evolution, for example, is enough to, you know, call into question the validity of religion, then it kind of falls away pretty easily after that, actually, if you just open your mind, of course, to the idea that maybe it's not the truth. Then that's kind of interesting, I think.
No doubt. I found that even with coming from my back, coming from a homeschooling realm, my parents were on the, they were kind of on the conservative side.
Yeah.
They didn't believe necessarily in like the wearing jean dresses and not watching movies or playing video games, but they were still pretty strict on a lot of aspects of that. But they were especially restrictive of like my social outlets when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I know I found that the aspect, but it was like it was an all-consuming kind of thing where even coming down to friends, like who you hang out with and such, or every friend that we had in our circle, they judged frequently. And sometimes, I hung out with certain friends a lot. Sometimes, my parents felt they had a bad attitude or something, and then we didn't spend as much time with that person or that family.
Yeah.
But it was really weird how, despite that, I don't know, it feels like it's like we're just going to keep you by yourself and, pump you full of our opinions, but not necessarily recognize that you're a human being and you're going to hold, despite everything we throw at you,
Right.
you may still come out to your own opinions. It's unfortunately, I feel it's rather arrogant, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I talk about this like so much when talking with other people about like why I deconverted, and a huge, a major like sort of stepping stone to that process, I think, was just realizing the hypocrisy in the church, and how, like just seeing people like say that they're, they claim love and acceptance and things of that nature, like to be humble, but then it's like they turn around and they force their beliefs on you, or they try to make you behave a certain way. And when you don't, you're essentially ostracized from like within the community, or you're kicked out even in, extreme situations. And so I just, the hypocrisy in the church is a main reason I initially left religion. And then after that is when the faith fell away. But what was homeschooling like though? 'Cause I mean I was in just your typical public schools and things of that nature. So, but what exactly did homeschooling entail? Did they teach you about things like evolution? I figured they probably did not, but I'm just interested in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, homeschooling consisted of a lot of, my parents were really into, there was homeschooling, curriculum companies out there, ministries, et cetera,
Right.
that kind of have these catalogs, supply books, et cetera. Starting out, there wasn't as many, but as time went along, especially in the 90s, the late thousand or, mid to late thousands, there was a lot of stuff that was coming out. But we definitely did not. We got a heavy dose of creationism in my homeschooling
Yeah.
upbringing. A lot of devotionals, et cetera. Once upon a time, I think one of my parents' big influences when I was younger, that kind of really helped form their opinions was there. We got hooked on this. There was this evangelist who calls a creation evangelist, Kent Hovind. I don't know if you know who he is. He actually got booked on tax evasion back in the several years ago.
Okay.
Lives in Florida. Calls himself Dr. Dino. Anyway, but my parents really got hooked on his. He had a lecture series and kind of really this person who's like, yeah. These are all the things that are wrong with evolution and people who believe evolution, started, Marxists, started like USSR, Nazi Germany, and, just believing in evolution made all these people really bad and kill everybody. And,
Wow, yeah.
they're all looking to take over the world. Evolutionists are people who are looking to take over the world, all that kind of jazz. But anyway, it was just, one of those things, as I mentioned, kind of bubble. My parents kind of tried to they're very pre-millennial or yeah pre-millennial I guess, where they were very worried about the rapture coming soon, tribulation, all that jazz. So we ended up that kind of tendency, they ended up getting to a point where they felt that buying property was the best thing, getting ready for things to go down, especially after the election of President Obama.
Oh yeah.
Surprise, nothing happened. Anyway,
Of
but
course.
there was a lot of paranoia, a lot of fear, and
Right.
they also felt that the church was largely apostate, you know, everyone was out to get them.
Wow, yeah.
And just, I don't know, it was just fairly insular, really, as far as that's concerned. But, you know, it wasn't all bad. Homeschooling, I went to my parents. One thing they really encouraged me to do was to learn to read, become literate. So I got to, one of the things I ended up doing a lot was, going to the library on a weekly basis, bringing home like 10, 15 books. And I think that was part of, you know, kind of my intellectual freedom at some point where, you know, they could limit my social outlets, et cetera. But, you know, I read a lot of books that they didn't necessarily read.
Right.
That didn't mean I was like, you know, looking up the satanic verses or anything when I was 12.
Yeah.
But, you know, just reading, I read a ton of classic literature, and I also ended up being one of those kids who listened to a lot of far right talk radio, but that also got me reading a number of different books on politics, history, political theory. So, you know, that kind of background where I just kind of left to myself and books kind of helped me that way. I feel like I'm fairly independent. They also encouraged me in music a lot, which was cool too. Studied piano.
You know, that's
my entire life.
I want to say that's really impressive that, you know, you took that initiative, I think, to read books, like spend your money on books. I know what I would have done. I probably would have spent it on candy or games or something like that. But you don't see a lot of kids spending their allowance money on books, at least during that time. I would have thought it would have been other things. But that's really cool, I think. And so the homeschooling, so it wasn't all bad, naturally. And so you said that you came from, I guess in this case, it would be a fundamentalist background. Does that mean they interpreted the Bible literally in that regard?
Yeah, they were very much in favor of interpreting the Bible literally, the King James Bible literally, which at one point made a lot of sense and seemed to be fairly coherent, I guess.
Right.
And still, till you realize that, I don't know, it's kind of funny to me that many people who claim that the Bible is literal will also, you know, they don't necessarily read everything literally.
Yeah.
For when Jesus Christ says, you know, I'm going to, you know, people will live to see me come back again.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, that's kind of throws a little bit of a monkey wrench in there.
Yeah, it does.
They'll say, no, it means they'll go into a bunch of code. You know, it's code for this or code for that kind of verbiage. Anyway, but yeah, they kind of I came from a literalist, Baptist / non-denominational kind of background.
Where they
consider myself, my parents to be kind of Christian nomads, you might say.
Interesting.
They would just, we'd go to a church for a few years. They were constantly worried that churches were letting heretical teachings seep into their church structure, their teachings. So they'd find something wrong with whatever church they happened to land in for a few years, and decide that they needed to move on, sometimes not go to church for a year or two, find another church, rinse and repeat throughout my childhood, which could be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're going to find a church that is completely free of its problems. Essentially, I think every single church is going to have some sort of issue behind closed doors with that regard. So it's interesting that they just kind of, like, I've never heard the term Christian nomads. I think that's a very interesting term. But what was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, for you personally? Like, in the process of deconversion, there's generally something, I mean, it's usually a culmination of things, but I think a lot of people will have, like, one thing that really stands out for them, or a couple things that stand out for them, too, that really helps them along in the deconversion process, or just completely, like, where they said, okay, this is definitely not right. And then, so what was that thing for you?
I would say it's humanity. I felt that I fell in love with humanity to some degree. I don't know. Part of it might have come through my experiences in politics. When I turned 18, I decided that I was going to be like the first person in my family to get politically active. So I ended up getting into political activities quite a bit. I ended up joining the local GOP chapter in my county. I set up a Young Republicans chapter. I founded it. Got involved in statewide campaigns. I even interned with the lobbyist organization. Perhaps even there was, I feel that, I guess one of the, I started interacting with a lot more people than I'd ever interacted with within politics. I met gay people who are really cool.
Right.
Were kind, nice people. When I started getting into, I interned with an organization that works on farm issues. I started talking and being interested in immigrant workers, and kind of, I don't know, getting an idea that life, I guess, more or less, once you get behind the rhetoric and the things that politicians and activist groups are constantly hawking, you find that life isn't as dogmatic and black and white in politics as people would like you to think it is.
Right.
And I started, I came from a background where my dad listened to a lot of right-wing talk radio, which got me involved in that. And I started getting a little bit concerned and upset with, unfortunately, what I feel is kind of casual racism and bigotry towards, people who are Mexican or Hispanic. I started meeting people who are of that nature. I was like, that wasn't okay with me. I saw that way too much within conservative Christian circles. But I think ultimately, that was kind of a starting point. But then I started dancing. I started getting some more autonomy. I got involved in a local community of dancers, swing dancing, about an hour away from where I grew up. And I just started feeling like, my parents were constantly concerned about, coming from a rural environment, going to the city, going to the town I lived in or I went to. They would go downtown and they just see people, tattoo artists, astrology people, people who had their hair colored the wrong way, gays and lesbians going down the streets and holding hands and kissing. And they just saw this, this den of villainy and of, Sodom and Gomorrah. And it was really hard for me to take that when I started meeting some of these people and realizing that, everybody has a story. Everybody has their hopes and dreams. These people aren't necessarily, something to be cast off into, hope, God rains judgment on them when he comes and the rapture and the tribulation and all that. It was really hard for me to say, these are people, these are human beings, just like you and me. These are my peers.
Right.
I feel that, human contact, human connection, made me feel that some of the things that people who, Christians nowadays, especially in America, seem to hawk is kind of lacking, and it's in compassion and in really seeing people for who they are.
And that's so true, because it's like within, when you're a Christian, you're told that, like, the world is essentially the valley and church is the mountain, right? It's the top of the mountain where you experience God and all the good things. And then you are supposed to, at least if you go to an evangelist church, which I certainly did, you're supposed to, take that down into the valley, apparently, and, spread that around to people, to sinners, in the valley. You know, the valley is like, you know, the darkness of the world, basically. So anything outside the church is essentially evil. And, you know, you see this in the Bible too, right? It's like, you know, God, he basically sanctions genocide, I think, like 5 times at least in throughout the Bible. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah being one of those times. And, you know, it's just, there's an amazing lack of empathy for other races in the Bible as well. You know, it's a very homogeneous take on, you know, issues that aren't black and white. And so it's like, you see, you know, they want to say that they're accepting, that, you know, the Bible teaches love and acceptance. But when I look at the Bible, when I read it now as an atheist, I look at it and I don't see love and acceptance. I see a very warped view on what love and acceptance should be. It's like love and acceptance only as long as that person believes and follows the same doctrines as you do. But when that person does not, you know, or, you know, it's love and acceptance as well, only if that person is willing to try to believe the same things. But if they don't, then that love and acceptance, it just kind of dissipates. It doesn't exist, essentially. And so it's just that idea that, you know, people are like, the idea that God's going to send you to hell simply for not believing in him is completely ridiculous to me. I mean, we are alive for a very small amount of time with regards to how old the universe is, like less than, you know, a blink of an eye, basically. And, you know, God's going to send us to hell for an eternity because he, like, we didn't believe in him? Or, you know, what about people who, you know, didn't get the chance to even, you know, try to believe in him or something like that? Mm-hmm. They're just automatically screwed, apparently, according to, you know, the Christian belief system. So I don't believe for a second, you know, and even as a Christian, I definitely struggled with the idea of hell. You know, I was like, this, it doesn't make sense to send people who are good people to hell just because they don't believe in God. Right. And it's like, if God is omnibenevolent, if he's omniscient, then hell wouldn't exist in the first place, you know? And it's a hard pill for me to swallow. And as a Christian, even though I went to a church that was pretty fundamentalist, you know, the pastor was like, I believe Jonas was in that whale for a week or 3 days, however long that was. And so they had a pretty, you know, literal interpretation of the Bible, I think. But it's only once you get out that you realize that that's totally just not right. And even going back to the whole homogeneous things, even within the church, you have churches saying that other churches aren't right. You know, they say that their interpretation of the Bible is wrong. This is why ours is right. And things of that nature. And it's just a complete, you know, no one knows exactly what the Bible is trying to say. And so they try to make it either be nice, or it's either like nice or fire and brimstone, essentially. But so when you were a Christian, what did the idea of God mean to you? Did you guys like do things like speak in tongues? Did you like feel the Spirit? Was it like the Holy Ghost kind of thing? Or things of that nature. What did God mean to you growing up?
Yeah, so my mom came from a background where it was more Pentecostal, speaking in tongues and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she and my dad actually kind of didn't like that very much. But at the same time, as far as concept of God, I mean, it was more something that was hammered into your head every day, that there was a God up in heaven who had very clear directives in mind. You have the Bible, read that every day. And you know, you better shape up, better be. I feel that for me, my biggest struggle with, you know, the concept of God was, I didn't really understand at the time, but as I've distanced myself from things, I felt that, you know, I never really, as much as I cried out and called out for him,
I never really heard him that much. Or I guess maybe the biggest thing for me was that it was a source of guilt. My parents are pretty authoritarian in their outlook on things, as far as making sure that I behaved, to make sure that, you know, I turned out the way that, you know, where I could support a family, have a wife and kids, be successful. I found myself just, you know, constantly beating myself up because I could never attain what my parents wanted me to do. I was always the lazy kid, the person who couldn't, you know, do everything that was asked of me at home. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, by having natural desires to, you know, I was really attracted to girls, you know, wanting to go out and date, you know, date girls, et cetera. I couldn't do that. I looked at porn, you know, I had a big struggle with porn for a number of years, and I wondered if I was a real Christian because I like to go seek out porn. That was probably one of my biggest struggles, was just being like, I messed up. It's the I guess maybe purity culture, mm-hmm, even. Mm-hmm. Was a big thing that way.
Yeah.
You know, just being constantly, you know, no woman's going to want you if you've been looking at porn. There's a lot of despair and anxiety that I had. It was really unclear for me as to who God was, or, you know, what he was really doing, other than, you know, causing me to just feel like I could never do anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, I definitely, you know, can, you know, relate to that struggle because, you know, I often felt like a hypocrite as a Christian, right? Like, you know, I look at my friends who were often in like leadership positions on the church, and I'm just like, look at them. They got all their shit together, right? And like, why can't I be like them, essentially? Like, why can't I be as strong in my faith as them? Or why do I have so many problems that they don't seem to struggle with? And then, you know, but I think everyone struggles with the same things, you know, on one level or another, you know? And it's like, they're just really good at hiding it. You know, the church is it's more about image than anything else, right? Like, purity, I think purity culture, too, is actually very unhealthy and certainly not something that I think should be really tolerated, because it's basically self-abuse, essentially, when you think about it. Like, oh, you gotta be pure, you gotta, you know, you gotta repent of your sins, you know, you can't go back and do all that shit, like, during the week, and then, you know, come on Saturday, and then, or Sunday, whatever, and be like, oh, well, now I'm forgiven, and then are you gonna be, like, a Sunday Christian only in name, or something like that? You know, the pastor had talks like that every once in a while, where it's like, you know, people feel great at church, and then they go back and to doing what they were doing before, and then they come back, and it's like a cycle, essentially. So everyone, I think, you know, as a Christian, you know, because we're humans, right? We're not God. We're not, like, someone who is free from human desires, which are completely natural desires. You know what I mean? And so, and no one is free from that. No matter what the pastor says, he's full of shit. Because, like, the holiest man on earth struggles with that, you know? And I mean, it's just ridiculous to me that, like, the whole thing about purity and things of that nature are just, and another thing I really struggled with, actually, was the idea of giving sin to God, right? Did you have tones like that where they're like, you have to give this to God? Is that something that you experienced?
I dealt with that a little bit. I think my biggest struggle was the fact that I didn't really feel like I could give it to God anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like I kept giving it to God, and it kept falling back in my lap.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like that constant, like, my yeah, I just couldn't. I felt, went through these phases, as you mentioned. You know, I'm the Sunday Christian. I'm like the person. I'm living a double life. I have these things that there were all these misattributed. I wanted to be real. I wanted to be honest, but I couldn't be. I really dealt with that with my parents, where. As I mentioned, everything about me was closely monitored.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to turn out, you know, at 18, you know, put together, knowing what I wanted to do, you know, ready to, in a few years, get married, have wife, make babies. But as I was approaching that point, I just didn't feel like I had a clue as to what I wanted to do. And I felt like, I was behind schedule. But more than that, there's a sense of, oh, so you're not, you're, I feel like I was depressed most of my teenage years, and mm-hmm. I didn't quite mm-hmm. understand it, or my parents didn't.
Yeah.
Even if they did, to some extent, they didn't believe, they believed that psychiatry was, you know, part of the devil.
Yeah.
Or kind of something that was meant to turn you away from God. So depression was solved by maybe what my dad has a good coping. What's my dad's coping mechanism for his problems is need to go out and work in the yard more. Need to go, get property. Need to, keep a boy busy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there may have been other issues that ways outlets or what have you to in ways to deal with it. But I always felt like I had this thing where my parents, my mom especially, said, you know, we just want you to be honest with us. Tell us, you know, what you think, mm-hmm. or, you know, what's going on. But they were my only source, the only people I could really turn to and talk to about things.
Yeah.
I couldn't, and I think I ended up just talking to my mom mostly. It was hard to talk to my dad about emotional things. But it would end up being like, be honest with us. But if you're honest with us, we're going to rant at you for hours.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you that you know, the ways you need to improve. We're going to tell you that you need to do, you know, we're going to kind of go to the same well over and over again. So it was this kind of constant cycle of me just like penting up and everything up inside and not saying anything. And then eventually breaking down and like saying, oh my gosh, these are all the bad things I've been doing. And then I was constantly being told, you know, we can't trust you. You're a liar and all that. And it's like, I never felt like I could be at peace or rest or understand that I didn't really feel like gaining credit for being authentic or raw or just, you know, I felt like my boundaries were violated all the time. I couldn't. I felt that books like 1984, I thought that they were a lot more real than to me at points because I don't know. Yeah, because you need to be holy and good. We're gonna make sure you turn out that way, and we're gonna do everything in our power to make sure that you don't. I don't know. I couldn't really develop. I couldn't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the whole thing about being honest and basically being reprimanded for it is very common, I think, in not just Christianity, but, you know, you see it, you know, everywhere, I think. But, it, you know, like recently, you know, in the news, there was a girl who got pregnant and she broke a, like, she was 18, she got pregnant and she was going to a Christian school. And, you know, she decided to keep the baby because, you know, a big thing of Christian rhetoric is, you know, abortion is murder. So it's like, they can't. So, like, everyone, like, they're pro-life, essentially. And, I mean, of course, you know that. But she got pregnant, but, you know, she decides to keep the baby, but she is still punished for it. She can't go to graduation and things of that nature. And I really struggled with, you know, the idea of giving sin to God as well, right? Like, what, like, throughout, like, my, you know, Christian faith when I was growing up, I was just like, what does that even mean? right? Does, like, what, like, I just imagine myself, like, oftentimes I think just giving something to some, like, white mist or whatever, because, you know, number one, I have no idea what God even looks like or what it is, and I'm just, like, I'm thinking, like, what does give sin to God mean exactly? Because I would, it seemed like every time I thought I was giving my sin to God, it would come back, you know? Like you said, it would, like, fall right back in your lap, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, is God real? Like, did, like, I thought I gave it to God. Like, and they don't really do a good job of explaining it in church, like, what giving something to God is. I think eventually people just sort of trick themselves into thinking they've given something to God, essentially, when they have, like, I think they just think that, you know, praying means giving something to God, or things of that nature, or abstaining from it, like hiding the issue under the rug. I think, you know, people think that means giving sin to God, but that's not giving sin to God. That's just, I don't know, I guess in a way torturing yourself. Because you want to, you know, you want to be this good person, you want to be Christian, and, you know, you want to live up to, you know, the expectations of what a Christian is supposed to be, and yet, you know, you have humanity in the way of that, and it's constantly, you know, just, it's a heavy burden, actually, you know, and, like, you know, when they have altar calls in the church, right, you don't want to be that person who raises their hand, you know, because everyone's going to see you. You know, or you don't want to be that person who goes up to the stage, you know, and I did that several times, I think, but it's just, it's a really hard thing to do because, you know, you know that people are watching you and you know they're judging you for it, and it, like, judgment is inescapable, I think, you know, no matter what, you know, Christians say about judging others, at some level, people are always going to judge people for what they've done or, like, what they choose to do during service or things of that nature. And so I don't know. I guess, you know, the idea of just giving something to God, like, it was really hard to grasp for me. And on the topic of God, since we've discussed it a lot, what do you think, you know, God is essentially in the Bible? Like, I guess, you know, there's a lot of discussion of, like, if God or Jesus came back in the second coming, would anyone recognize him? How would we know it's Jesus, right? So, like, it could just be some sort of, like, really powerful extraterrestrial being trying to fuck with humanity, maybe. But what do you think the idea of God is, like, who God is, essentially?
Yeah. No, so I feel like God became... So... One of the things that was heavily emphasized in my circles was that Christ is God's representation to man of God, and then there's also there's a very heavy emphasis on the patriarchy, where fathers speak to God on behalf of the family,
right?
So I don't know. I got a heavy dose of feeling that God was very arbitrary. And it didn't make a ton of sense to me, but then I didn't quite think that as a kid as much, but now that I look at the Bible, I feel that the Old Testament God is kind of unhinged a little bit. You mentioned, and I feel that that's something the American church at present really heavily emphasizes, is that God of judgment, the God who doesn't put up with people you know, messing around with him, with people, you know, breaking his laws. But what are his laws, and where's his... He says he's a God of grace and a God of mercy, but he's also a God who really likes to fuck shit up.
yeah, that's true.
Like, I don't know. So there's like that. There's the Old Testament God who really does that a lot.
Right.
Then there's Jesus, and I feel that there's three, in essence, maybe three gods of the Bible, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the God of the Old Testament, there's Jesus, and then there's kind of Paul's idea of God.
Yeah,
Where Paul's this guy who comes along like 50 to 60 years after Jesus was born.
and kind of comes up with these fairly legalistic, but slightly more, what you call it, ecumenical kind of approach. They says is consistent, but you know, sometimes has some major holes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I feel that that's kind of what the God of the Bible is. But I've really grown to hate the God of the Bible, the Old Testament especially.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hate him in both Testaments, but...
I hate him in all instances, really, but like the Old Testament, the one that really got to me was the Old Testament, because here's a God who, when he speaks to, say, the Israelites, he says, be kind to the stranger. You know, take, because you were wanderers and strangers once. But when it comes, and he says, but when it comes to entire civilizations outside of them, you know, destroy them. Or he brings up, you know, that don't, I think the biggest one for me is don't judge fathers for the sins of their sons.
Mm-hmm.
And don't judge the sons for the sins of their fathers. He tells the Israelites that commandment. Yet, you know, entire civilizations, that's men, women, children, everybody in a city like Sodom and Gomorrah, mm-hmm. or the Amalekites or Jericho, they've all got to die.
Right.
That's not consistent.
Nope.
At all. Yeah. that's really abhorrent.
Yeah, you know,
put it mildly, that you're not actually, you're calling for judgment of entire nations, which conveniently happened to be in the way of this tribe of people who are looking to conquer and make their own land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, it's interesting you brought, you know, a third God in there with, you know, Paul's idea of God, right? And it's totally true, like, you know, you don't just have the Trinity, you don't just have Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, you know, if you follow the Trinity. But you also have, Paul's idea of God. You know, you have people who say, you know, like red letter Christians who only, you know, believe in what Jesus said. And, you know, they say that, they claim that Jesus preached love, acceptance, you know, love thy neighbor, things of that nature. And then you have Paul come along and he throws down all these sets of rules, essentially, you know, rules for women, rules for men. And it seems to completely contradict everything that, you know, red letter Christians say Jesus did, you know, or what Jesus wanted. And if Jesus is God, then wouldn't his words sort of supersede Paul's? Like, Paul would be the state in this case, and Jesus would be like the Constitution, I guess. And then, you know, and there's so many contradictions in the Bible too. You know, a lot of people will say that, you know, the OT, like the Old Testament, those are old laws, right? We don't need to follow those. So they try to just like completely wipe the OT off, you know, as if that makes the Bible any better, which I personally don't think it does, even if you only follow the New Testament. But it's like they wipe that off and they say, no. See, God is basically what Jesus said in the New Testament. But then, you know, you have the scripture that says God is the same as he was before, now, and after, you know, essentially. Like, he's the same.
Right.
And it's like, so how do you reconcile that, you know? And then, you know, of course you have, you know, they just keep coming up with these, like, rationalizations for why it is the way it is. And I was actually listening to a recent episode of Everyone's Agnostic. Have you heard of Everyone's Agnostic?
No, I haven't.
It's another sort of like ex-Christian themed podcast where their sole focus is like interviewing people about their deconversion stories. And it's part of the reason that I actually wanted to start this podcast here as well. But they talked about how, like, you know, in the 50s, like, you know, being gay was a sin, right? And I mean, today it still is, but like, you definitely could not do that kind of thing, right? And then, but now it's like you have Christians who are okay with the idea of, you know, homosexuality. You know, you have people who are gay who are, you know, LGBTQ plus confirming Christians, basically, mm-hmm. now. And I think a lot of people, they just, like, God is very, you know, they talk about this in this episode. I'll link it in the show notes. But, you know, God is very, I think the idea of God is actually humanistic in nature, because people, they want to ignore the bad shit he does, right? They want to ignore, or like, they want to say God had a good reason for doing what he did. And I'm like, I don't know if there's any sort of context you can put genocide in, like killing all firstborns in Egypt, even the cows and shit, you know, like, I don't know if that, you know, you can actually put that in a good context, no matter what was going on, and say that, you know, God was just justified in wiping out entire civilizations multiple times, including the earth during the flood, and say that that was good. But, you know, people want to apply their own human values to who God is, right? I mean, I remember participating in a debate recently where someone was like, oh, well, no, see, the Bible isn't sexist, right? It's not, you know, women aren't supposed to submit, like, everyone is equal in the eyes of God, but women still need to have authority, right? Which is basically men in this case. And it's like, they try to ignore that part, and they try to only focus on, like, you know, women, like, everyone is equal in the eyes of God, but it still doesn't wipe the fact that, you know, there's still a very sexist, like, sort of hierarchy in the Bible, you know? And so people want to, they want to ignore those bad things. They want to say that there's a good reason for all of this, but in reality, I think, you know, they're just trying to hide the fact that, you know, maybe they don't actually agree with who God is, or, you know, who God was in the OT and the NT, as well as Paul's idea of God. I don't know. What would you have to say about that?
Yeah, and I've actually been thinking about that a lot recently. I came across a post somewhere that noted a verse in Levitical Codes and Numbers, the book of Numbers, where if a woman cheated on a man, or if a man felt that his wife had cheated on him, he could take her to initiate a meeting between her and a priest, where a priest would give her, you know, water that was, I think it says something of the water that gives the curse in the King James Bible. And if she was guilty of having cheated on her husband, her, you know, her limbs, her hip and her thigh would waste away. Some versions even say a miscarriage, but she would be a curse to the people and she wouldn't be able to have children.
Right.
Based on her husband getting a burr up his ass that she was cheating on him, the onus falls on her. And we've got this state of, you know, basically, you know, pick from black and white stones in a bag and determine whether somebody's guilty. But a couple more steps worse than that, where she's, you know, she could be deformed for the rest of her life. For what? Is that really, you know, looking at it from a modern standpoint, as far as a, you know, from science, from even just an having tested out law and ethics, you know, how is that how can you possibly justify that as a good thing, as being something that's reasonable, that's, you know, where you're having a woman, you know, drink water that's toxic. And, you know, that seems more a matter of genetics as to whether she would hold up to that or not. Not necessarily something that's got any, you know, spiritual or, you know, moral moral standards or whatever. Something that can really hold up to that. Anyway, but looking at, you know, but when you look at the Bible and you see that, and then you go to the New Testament, you see Jesus looking, saying that, kind of, you know, acknowledging the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, and saying, you know, that's, you know, God's, you know, let's wipe all that, you know, God's perfect, God never changes, you know, you got people saying all that, but it's like, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, God doesn't change. God's sensible, God's reasonable. You know, if you, you know, point verses out like that, people say, no, you know, that's, you know, that's not something we do anymore. Well, if God is all knowing and he has perfect standards, why is he using such kind of, you know, superstitious, witchcrafty kind of ways of going about,
right,
you know, judgment,
yeah,
and those kinds of situations, you know, dealing with disputes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but if that's, that's the way he deals, if you're going to say that God, that the, you know, you're following the Bible to the letter and that, yeah, God, everything that God says is right, can you really justify that?
Yeah. You know, he has, for someone who is supposedly all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving, he has a very roundabout way of doing shit. and he always wants to, like, show off his power, right? Like, he's a child who just got a hold of, you know, the world's biggest bazooka or something. And he wants to, you know, the whole reason he wipes out the firstborns in Egypt is because he wants to show off his power or something like that, if I'm recalling that correctly. And then he just, God to me is a very petty being, it seems like, you know, like if we can recognize that, you know, wiping out civilizations for not believing what you do is wrong, then I'm pretty sure that means we are, you know, moralistically on a higher ground than God is, or at least the God of the Bible is, you know? And it's just, there's so many contradictions in the Bible, and I really struggled with that. Although I think as a Christian, I just mostly ignored that stuff, and I think a lot of Christians do, to be honest with you. Even, like, fundamentalist Christians want to ignore it a lot of the times, I think. At least the ones who are evangelists, yeah, will try to do that. And it's interesting to me how they always tell you whenever you first speak, at least this has been my experience, when, you know, someone's, like, you know, asking about the faith and wondering, you know, they're wondering what books they should start with in the Bible. They always say start from, you know, the four Gospels. You know, they don't say start from the OT. They just say start from the New Testament. And to me, you know, it makes sense why they would say that, because, you know, you try to read the Old Testament, you know, as someone trying to break into the faith, and you're probably not going to break into the faith if you start with the Old Testament. You know.
Yeah. It's going to be like, yeah, what I really want God's law to come back into style. Not particularly.
Nope. And I mean, it's so weird to me how Republicans have sort of latched on to religion so much, you know, and I'm sure there are Republicans who aren't religious, but, like, it seems like Republican and Christianity have almost become synonymous, at least in America. And it's like they try to, you know, put God's law back, like, into the Constitution. And that's what scares me the most about religion. And, you know, you look at countries in the Middle East where Islam is in control, and it's crazy over there. You know, there's tons of persecution. You know, people are killed for being gay or, you know, having a different set of beliefs. And, you know, I really do feel like, you know, Christianity is held back by secular law right now, in America. You know, we have the Constitution. And so I'm so glad that, you know, the founding fathers based it on a secular, you know, standpoint or foundation, even though, you know, it's still, there's a lot of hypocritical things that came out of that, obviously, because we had slavery for 200 years and, you know, people couldn't get married for the longest time, or, like, gay people couldn't get married for the longest time. And so, you know, there's still some things there, but at least secular law has, like, you know, the separation of church and state. Although, you know, despite that, Christianity still manages to fuck shit up. And it's like, it's just that, it's interesting how, I don't know, it just really, in a sense, terrifies me that people are so bent on forcing others to believe what they want, even though the beliefs, like, I'm fine if you believe something else, right? But don't force that stuff onto other people, because when you try to force law onto other people, especially law that is based on an irrational belief system, then that's where I have a problem. And It's a big problem, I think, for America, especially now that Trump has come to power. And, you know, it's like we're under the most theocratic, I think, government since the U.S., you know, came to be, pretty much. And, you know, which is crazy to think about. But I was actually going to ask you, you know, you mentioned earlier that you worked, you know, as a Republican activist, I guess, in a sense. Do you still identify as Republican, or have your political beliefs shifted since you've deconverted?
That's interesting that you should mention that. So I, you know, this last election was really, really, really hard for me. Cause I voted in the Republican primary. I consider myself to be somebody who feels that there are elements within the Republican Party that I appreciate, it's probably the strongest place for advocating for fighting against needless regulation, right. And for being somewhat of a I feel it can be sensible that way, and those are things that I enjoy about the party. But I found that theocratic element, that element that ultimately wanted their champion in office, which is crazy because it's this dude who's just, you know, if I was looking at Jesus and looking at the Beatitudes, Donald Trump resembles nothing right. of that. You have this element though within Christianity where they feel they've been put upon by secular left for 60 years that they just and they feel that their politicians aren't doing enough, that they're compromising too much, that they're letting the secular left beat them down. They decided that they just to hell with it all, let's just go with somebody who who's supposedly going to fight for us. And I had a big problem with that. I think maybe that kind of gets into another portion of some of my inner fights that I had with myself for a number of years. Once I got into politics, I started really embracing pragmatism and being a states, and appreciating people who are statesmen. I supported John Kasich, Ohio's governor, for president. That was who I cast my vote for in 2016. But people who, I actually looked to the Bible for some of my inspirations as far as, some of the people who really, I could look up to and people who I could emulate in public life, in politics. And you look at people like Daniel, for example, from the Bible, or Joseph. These were men who were, especially Daniel, devout in a private manner, but people who also didn't wear their faith on their sleeve. They're quiet. They prayed. Take Daniel, for example. Somebody who, was known for his wisdom and for his ability to, take care of people, to govern wisely, to govern ultimately. Because, in government, we got to have roads. We need to be educated. We need to, a lot of the, common things that we have, we need defense, we need police officers, we need armies, all those things are things that everybody needs, and that's something that government is best at providing. I actually, kind of bouncing over to the story of Joseph in Genesis, the son of Jacob, he goes to Egypt and he ends up being, basically becoming prime minister to Pharaoh. And, what did he do? Was he like tearing down idols? Was he instituting God's law? No, he was somebody who proposed, we need to, save money, we have 7 years of plenty coming. We need to prepare for the 7 years of famine. He, in essence, created a rainy day fund that helped keep people alive. And, seeing examples like that in the Bible made me feel like, you know, I was like, those are people I can really associate with. Those are people that I really appreciate in right. public life. And, you know, when I started seeing people, I think I realized that was more important. I became very much interested in democracy, how democracy works, you know, representing the people that you're around, whether that's in your neighborhood, in your street, in your mm-hmm. city, rather than, you know, looking out for people as a whole, rather than, you know, just looking out for your own interest group. You're stronger together if you're looking out for everybody, not just yourselves. Right. And that really clashes with what a lot of conservatives do, where it's, you know, we basically want to, you know, put the Bible into place. I think, but I don't know if you, how much experience you have with this, but my family hung out with a lot of people who believed in what's called the Quiverful mm-hmm. movement. You know, Bill Gothard, ATI, where our Vision Forum too, where basically, you know, we need to raise up godly kids. The Joshua generation, or I think they called it the Joshua mm-hmm. generation. You know, people who can go out there, we're going to unleash all these kids out on America, and they're going to, when we're going to have 10 kids apiece, and, you know, by merely out populating and out educating, you know, our kids in apologetics, et cetera, we're going to, you know, bring God's kingdom mm-hmm. back, and set the kingdom up for God. I interacted with a lot of those people, a lot of people who came from a very Calvinist background, but it leaked into a lot of conservative homeschooling families, even like my parents, who aren't necessarily Calvinists or believe in that ideology. Anyway, but the effect that it had was, you find that, for one, it's a little bit foolhardy to expect to just, you know, dominate in that fashion.
Right.
But two, I realized that a lot of the people heading up those movements tended to be very patriarchal and very severe. And then you start drawing, I started reading more history and literature, and you start realizing what these people actually wanted, theocracy of the likes of the Puritans who, you know, burned witches in Massachusetts, right. who required that, you know, church membership you know, in order to vote, you had to have church membership in many places in the Northeast before the American Revolution. It even passed that a little bit, but I think it was more before the Constitution was put into place. That was actually something that the founders, you know, some of the deistic founders of ours, like Jefferson, people who were outside of that realm, outside of the Northeast or in states that weren't like Massachusetts, people of other sects who felt that, you know what, we don't want theocracy in America. We don't want one church, one religious ideology dominating our country. Yeah. Anyway, you start reading back and you start realizing, oh my God, these people that I interact with, these people who've made my life miserable, these people who, you know, who hold these beliefs, they want to put this back yeah. into place. They believe that that Massachusetts, that, you know, even the Pilgrims, that was the best time of our lives. And like, no, it wasn't. I think when I was going through college, I studied literature. I did an online college. It was awesome. It was cool mm-hmm. in some ways. Anyway, but I read about, I don't know. Have you ever read Plymouth Plantation?
I have not.
Or not Plymouth Plantation. forget the name of the, it's basically the who's, what's the name of the guy who, like the head honcho of the Pilgrims, wrote a, kind of retold their journey across from England to Holland to America. And I found myself being like, oh, this is, I'd read accounts of it, you know, retellings and all that. But when I starting to actually get into their theology, not their theology, but what they actually said, as they were going across the ocean, the author's like, yeah, so, there was a sailor lad and he swore and cursed oaths against God. And guess who died? Who was the first to die?
Yeah.
That swearing, no good young sailor, because God meant it that way.
Where's the grace and mercy in that one?
Yeah, no. Anyway, but just kind of, being among those kinds of people and then seeing what they actually wanted, that made me cringe and kind of bristle inside, that people would actually want to, put that back into place, and impose that on our nations. Like, that's not what I thought we were created to be. I thought we were supposed to be this ecumenical society that accepts people from all backgrounds, from all religions, from all persuasions.
Yeah.
And you start realizing, the end goal, while people won't say it within those communities to the public.
Yeah.
But within the community, if they had the numbers, if they have the power, they would very much want to do some of the things that they've done before.
Mm-hmm.
In previous, experiments, and in societies. So to think that, I don't know, that's something that kind of made me revolt and cause revulsions inside of me. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean, so are you saying that you kind of, you're not as Republican as before, or like, has your idea on, what the Republican Party is changed then? And so would you say you lean more towards the other side now, or would you say you're still kind of leaning towards the Republican Party?
Well, with the election of Donald Trump, I found myself very much, I tore up my GOP card, basically.
Ah, okay.
I have a hard time with it.
Uh-huh.
I live in a progressive state,
mm-hmm.
That has a lot of cool Republicans.
yeah.
I know a lot of Republicans in the state, cool, some really cool people even, who aren't, from that realm as much, people who are actually interested in setting up governing and coming from a more of a, secular outlook on things.
Right.
But this America First, let's shut out the Mexicans, let's shut down free trade, let's shut down Planned Parenthood, let's do a bunch of these things, let's be people who are embracing populism, who aren't as interested in really getting into the nitty gritty as much as making sure that they, slam liberals into the ground.
Yeah.
it got really hard for me to take, to see all these people. I don't know. I kind of came up, my political upbringing, when I first started in politics was quite right around when the Tea Party got rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
I knew all these people who said things like, I believe in limited government, believe that the government shouldn't be involved in, my personal life, get the government out of my, I felt that people had some fairly articulate views at points.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that there were even some politicians who I really appreciate who came out of the Tea Party movement. like Rand Paul. Like, yeah. I feel Mark Rubio is a lot more conservative than me, but I feel he's somebody who's kind of a statesman. Rob Portman, a number of people who came out of that movement, I feel were really articulate and people who could espouse these beliefs. But it got more and more ridiculous, and people started seeing the government as, you know, they couldn't. I felt that they couldn't. People had a harder time with reality. They felt that they could, you know, even having just one house of government, they could throw all these laws into place with a Democratic Senate and a Democrat president. Mm-hmm. They could overthrow Obamacare. They could do all these things. They started coming up with this laundry list of demands that they couldn't possibly pass. Mm-hmm. And they kept getting more and more frustrated and acting as if Republicans were looking out for their interests.
Yeah.
And then eventually they started throwing more radical and radical politicians in there, like Ted Cruz, very religious, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then it came to a breaking point where everything was out the window. We picked this guy who's a, Donald Trump, who's, three times married, and not just three times married, but somebody who ultimately, bragged about, grabbing women by the pussy, who, just everything just that you repulsive. Wouldn't want your daughter, like, every Christian man would not want their daughter anywhere near.
Right.
They're racing with bolt up in arms. They're not looking for somebody who, I really got upset. Mm-hmm. When I was raised not to do those things. I was given ethics that said all the things that he, all of his mannerisms, I read the Proverbs a lot as a kid. People who are hot-headed, you shouldn't put them anywhere near power. Just be careful with your words. I saw none of that, but so many Christians embraced him wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and I saw that. Did you see the meme of the Jesus carrying, in the white robe, white Jesus carrying four suitcases and saying, "On my way back to the White House"?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I cringed so hard at that.
Yeah, I just couldn't stand. I found that ultimately I think that was the breaking point. That may have been the true breaking point for me last year, was the election.
Mm-hmm.
Was seeing that as much as the good things that I felt that Christianity had to offer,
right?
Like compassion, like taking care of the needy. Emphasizing wisdom and prudence, those were all out the window.
Yeah.
And I saw my own dad. My own dad has gotten caught up into that. He and I had a major argument, actually, over Thanksgiving, where he felt that because he's very paranoid about there are a lot of, and he's not alone in this, that the Antichrist is, at foot.
Yeah.
And the governments of the world are all getting together to make 10 kingdoms.
10 kingdoms for the Antichrist?
The 10 kingdoms for the Antichrist, and we need to stop that.
10 Antichrists? I don't know how that works.
What's that?
10 Antichrists? I mean, it seems like whoever comes into power that does not believe the same thing is the Antichrist. So I don't know how many Antichrists exactly there are.
Yeah, well, 10, I guess 10 kingdoms that would come under one Antichrist. The world's going to be separated into 10 kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
He's just caught up with that. And, immigrants coming across the border means that, America's losing its sovereignty, and we got to keep the immigrants out, and some of this paranoid fear,
which religion fuels.
What's that?
Religion fuels that fear.
Yeah, no doubt. And I just found I raised Yeah, my dad basically called me a foot soldier of the Antichrist at Thanksgiving a couple
wow.
years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
it was really great.
That's
and
thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. We didn't. It's it was one of those. I don't know. I felt that I was raised with better ethic. It was funny. My dad was like one of those people who, he emphasized being careful about what you say. on Facebook, don't make personal attacks. But when it came down to it, like he just lost. I felt like I was being pragmatic, and I was trying to discuss things with him on
civil grounds.
Like, I was like, I don't like Donald Trump. These are the reasons I have strong reasservations about him. And then it's just like turns into that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean,
I can't stomach the fact that Christians just embraced a guy who's doesn't, I feel, really reflects mm-hmm. at least the good things about Christianity.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so funny. Like I basically voted for the Antichrist back in 2016 for Barack Obama, not 2016, 2012, the previous election, mm-hmm. and like. It was so funny. I was talking to my friend, and as a Christian, I was Christian during that time, and as a Christian, even I was pretty liberal, which I guess probably made it easier for me to break away from the religion. My family was also very liberal and democratic, so when like they were very they were never like super crazy religious. I don't think my mom ever was. So I mean, it was really easy for me to just say, well, this is kind of bullshit, and leave without any repercussions, so to speak, although I have not told the majority of my Christian friends yet, so we'll see how that goes down. But I was talking with a friend of mine slightly after the election, or slightly after voting, and like my friend was like, yeah, so obviously I voted for Romney, and I was like, you voted for Romney? Like, really shocked, and I was, and like he had this shocked look on his face, like as if to say, "Wait, you didn't vote for Romney?"
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I was like, "Did I say something wrong?" And so I just think that's funny, my church is definitely the church I went to is definitely Republican, like, and I think all churches probably are, although there's probably liberal or democratic churches somewhere, but like, and so, the head pastor, like the pastor elder basically was at, the inauguration dinner. There's a video of it on YouTube, actually. And, he's saying thank you for, he's at the prayer breakfast, essentially, not dinner. But he's like, saying how this is going to be a great time where, God's going to come back into America again, And I'm just like, wow, I can't believe I went to that church. But so what do you identify now as, like, do you believe in God still? Or
I consider myself to be at one point a few years ago I was struggling with the fact that I was thinking I'm non-religious, but I might go back to religion at some point, or might go to church,
mm-hmm.
and find a more liberal wing or something. Or I was kind of fed up with some. I really appreciate some of the orthodoxy of other sects mm-hmm. that we weren't a part of when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I really thought Catholicism might be a way I might go, like find a more liberal Catholic church. I even saw my parents think that the Catholic Church is basically going to help the biggest heretical church out there.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandpa is Catholic. He was dormant for like 40 years because my grandma was also very ardently anti-Catholic in her beliefs. Like she married initially as a Catholic, but then she became a Protestant.
Mm.
And after a couple of years, she's like, oh, God, this is Catholic Church? Nuh-uh. This is not what I'm going to do. And she basically made my grandpa's life a living hell if he ever thought about like really doing anything Catholic Church wise, taking my having my dad and my uncle go to Catholic school. Anyway, but I saw my grandpa go into the Catholic Church, and like I really love the Catholic Church's emphasis on works.
Mm-hmm.
And like once like grandma died in 2007, first week after she dies, grandpa goes to mass every week. And then, like, he starts going to Catholic Church more than he went bowling, which pretty amazing. Anyway, I love that change that I saw in him. I was kind of considering for a couple of years. I'm like, maybe I'll check out a mass or something. But yeah, nowadays though, I tried going to a mass on Christmas, and I just felt empty. I felt like it was kind of I was seeing a lot of the same things that I'd seen in all the other my other church experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I felt empty, but yeah, I think nowadays I consider myself to be, I consider myself to be an atheist now.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty ardently anti God of the Bible
for
the most part.
Sure. Me too.
But yeah, I think atheistic humanist, I guess,
mm-hmm.
is kind of how I see myself.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's funny too. When I was, you know, in the middle of the deconversion process, towards the end, towards the end of the deconversion process, I really did not want to become an atheist. You know, because I get that's probably due to the fact that, you know, in church they're always telling you, like, atheism is the worst thing ever. You know, atheists are evil people. You know, they're sinners. Right, spawn of Satan, things of that nature, and I did not want to become an atheist. But you know, the more I tried to deconstruct my faith, I tried to find like every good thing about it. Like, there's got to be something good. There's got to be something correct, you know. And you know, I was like, I remember talking with my friend where I was like, maybe a year or two ago, I was in the part like a year and a half ago, maybe. I'm not sure when. It was fairly recent, I guess, in terms of my lifespan, but. So I was talking to him when I was going through this, and I was like, I asked, you know, that question that every Christian asks as if to say checkmate atheist, where it's like, you know, if humans descended from apes, why are there still apes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked him that question, and later that night I go on Google, and I'm like, what happens if I actually Google this question? And immediately there's an answer that makes sense, and I'm just like, well, that's a stupid question. And so it was just like, it's interesting how, like, when you're deconverting, you try so hard to hang on to it, you know, and, but it just, it falls away naturally. I think personally, belief is not a choice, you know, it's something that happens to you naturally during the course of, you know, life, like circumstances will have an effect on what you believe, basically. And so I just eventually over time just became an atheist. I am currently, I identify as agnostic atheist. Other term might be weak atheist. So I don't claim to know whether or not there is a God, although I'm pretty much 100% certain if there is a God, it's not going to be the God of the Bible. But I for certain do not believe in God. So it's interesting. The belief and knowledge spectrum have a variety of interesting combinations, I think. But, yeah, so is there anything else that comes to mind that you wanted to talk about or anything like that?
Yeah, as far as, you know, kind of, it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, kind of the belief. I found it to be very enlightening with now I've been kind of going down the path of just being appreciating being an apostate,
mm-hmm.
more or less. You know, when I'm on Facebook, I could be slightly trollish,
yeah.
And more or less just, you know, posting things that are a little bit satirical or, you know, kind of poking fun at biblical characters. maybe more kind of in a Monty Python kind of way, where, you know, you just see absurd things or you try to take things in absurd ways.
Yeah.
It's been interesting when I've also been posting quite a bit, like quotes by Christopher Hitchens, the atheist journalist who wrote, I've been reading his book, God is Not Great.
Yeah. That's one I've also need to pick been, up.
Yeah, it's a terrific book, by the way. I've been reading him. I've been reading, looking at, you know, forums online, but kind of embracing philosophy and, kind of really looking into atheistic thought. I have a number of friends who are, you know, Christian, and they're coming at me with with these counter arguments against it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize how far I've come from those beliefs.
Yeah.
But I found it kind of I saw somebody mention something at one point that, you know, apologetics, the people who try to go out there and explain Christianity and make sense of it and, kind of fight for it on a public stage,
mm-hmm.
What C.S. Lewis did to some extent, but then you've got people who are wannabe C.S. Lewis's out there who, evangelist people who fight for the faith. And their arguments are more to keep doubt from within the church from getting out of control.
Yeah.
But they don't really seem to try to connect with atheists as much.
No, yeah.
Or people who don't agree with them.
Yeah, I've noticed, like, as far as, like, apologetics are concerned and things of that nature, they're more for, like, confirming your own beliefs than they are for, like, trying to get people to change their beliefs. And that's what debating is, essentially. You know, no one's really going to change their beliefs, I think, like, mid-debate. You know, that rarely happens unless they're already at that questioning phase, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, change happens, I think, after a debate and after people think about it and things of that nature. So I guess for a final question, I do want to ask, what's next for you? So are you going to be more politically involved again, or, like, are you going to get involved in, like, free thinking groups or things of that nature?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I have, you know, politically, I don't feel I really have a home.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to do anything, it would be outside of the two parties.
Yeah.
Not necessarily forming a third party. I feel that's kind of absurd, but it would be more along the lines of advocacy groups. I'm very, my heart's very drawn to immigrants, mm-hmm. and immersing people, getting people, prepared for life in America. Get people integrated, it's like the assimilated. Assimilated is more the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Getting involved with immigrant groups, minority groups, is something I'm very drawn to if I end up in politics.
Yeah.
But I've been finding myself to be, I went through a phase where I had a hard time being interested in philosophy, because
mm-hmm.
I was very torn in my mind with, I don't want to, maybe not necessarily wanting to leave Christianity. Like, my parents had made it a way where it's like, if you don't believe in our belief system, especially even in our particular beliefs, if you believe that if you can give evolution any credence, if you don't believe that there's, that God's all-knowing, etc., there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
I really battled with that inside, and I kind of turned off my brain as far as, really wanting to discover truth or really, plumb the depths on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm away from that, I feel a little bit more empowered to actually start really delving into those things again.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is, you know, as I mentioned, kind of been reading more. I've been going through Crash Course Philosophy on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Just generally, yeah, feeling like I can kind of walk with a sense of purpose as to, you know, things I believe somewhat more along the lines of, you know, there's a little bit of security in understanding I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But to, you know, ponder, to ask questions,
yeah.
To, you know, seek a prod, discover, back up, dig in some more. I like that. I like being, you know, being able to be free to be inquisitive and not to. I felt there were somewhat artificial boundaries in Christianity for me, as far as, you know, hey, do you want, you know, do I want to dive into the depths of human experience? No, not. I mean, it's cool to a point, but, you know, if you get into those gray areas, if you get into those, you know, get into to those murky waters, you got to back out and, you know, lash yourself to the mast of God.
Yeah.
And you, so it felt, it was kind of, it could be very restrictive. Like you couldn't I couldn't necessarily consider everything I wanted to consider.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess, yeah, more or less, just generally seeking out people who are interested in those things as well.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, getting involved in immigrant advocacy groups potentially. Those are just kind of, I just feel generally free to pursue a lot of the things that I haven't really been
mm-hmm.
interested in pursuing as much.
Well, that's really cool. And so do you want to go by your name on this episode? I should probably ask that. Or do you want to just remain anonymous for this?
Oh, I don't care. My name's Johnny.
Okay, Johnny, is that cool? Awesome. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Johnny, for coming on the Not Gnostic podcast. And, you know, we've spent a good chunk of time talking. And if in the future you want to come back on, go ahead and just shoot me a message. So,
absolutely.
Please,
I would love to talk with you again, Ty.
Yeah, and maybe next time even, you know, Abby can join us again. He's been absent the last few episodes, but that'd be fun too. So thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Anytime.